You're just in time for the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff, the radio outreach of the Christian Research Institute. Our purpose here at CRI is to equip Christians to pursue sound doctrine, to discern truth and error, and to become faithful disciples of Christ, because life and truth matter. For more information, to order resources or donate, call 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org. The following program was pre-recorded. Now, here's the president of the Christian Research Institute, Hank Hanegraaff.
Thank you very much, Randy, and it is great to be in studio today to talk to all of you, to answer your questions, and to bring up an issue. It's an issue with respect to why God would allow bad things to happen. And there is, at first blush, as many responses to that question as there are religions. But in reality, there are only three basic answers: pantheism, philosophical naturalism, and theism. Pantheism denies the existence of good and evil because, in that view, God is all and all is God. Philosophical naturalism, which is the worldview that undergirds evolutionism, presupposes that everything is a function of random processes. Therefore, there is no such thing as good and evil for a philosophical naturalist. Theism alone has a relevant answer, and only Christian theism can answer the question satisfactorily. Christian theism acknowledges that God created the potential for evil because God created human beings with freedom of choice. We choose to love, we choose to hate, we choose to do good, we choose to do evil, and the record of history bears eloquent testimony to the fact that humans, of their own free will, have actualized the reality of evil through their choices. Without choice, however, love is rendered meaningless. God is neither a cosmic rapist who forces love on people, nor a cosmic puppeteer who forces people to love him. Instead, God, who is the personification of love, grants us the freedom of choice that renders evil possible. But without such freedom, we would be little more than pre-programmed robots. The fact that God created the potential for evil by granting us freedom of choice ultimately will lead to the best of all possible worlds, a world in which there'll be no more death or mourning or crying or pain, because the old order of things will have passed away. Those who choose Christ will be redeemed from evil by the goodness of Christ and will forever be able not to sin. Whenever we have tragedies, it brings us immediately in touch with our morality. It also brings us in touch with our mortality. What do we believe? What do we think and how do we act in this world? And do we recognize that life is but a vapor here today and gone tomorrow? That eternity is forever? And that we are but a heartbeat away from eternity? I have an interesting habit, and that is I look at the obituary pages virtually every day, and I see the names and the faces: 68, 56, 86, occasionally 96. You have people who live short lives and people who live long lives. But the reality is, even if you live to be 100, your life is short with respect to eternity. And therefore, I think it's crucial that we come to a true valuation of things and are poured out in new and better fashion. If you are a believer, you need to make your life count to build on the foundation of Christ with gold and costly stones and silver. And if you are a non-believer, it means that you should take seriously the reality that God created the universe, that Jesus Christ is God, and that the Bible is divine as opposed to merely human in origin. These are life and death issues that impact every single person listening to my voice right now. Prepare yourself. And as a believer, always be ready to give an answer, a reason for the hope that lies within you with gentleness and with respect. A lot of you hanging on will go right to the phone calls. First up today is Mike. He's listening on the web in Trinidad, Colorado. Hi, Mike.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I need to define a term before I answer my question. I'm using the dictionary definition of the word lie, which is basically any intentional deception. Okay. So based on that, how could you say that, you know, when God convinced Abraham that he was going to have to kill his son, I mean, wasn't that an intentional deception?
Well, not at all. And I think one of the things you have to recognize at the outset of answering a question like that is that the Bible deals with divine condescensions to us as human beings. Because if the Bible did not do so, then we simply would not get it. So we don't want to take language like God asking Adam and Eve, where are you, and try to pour that language into a woodenly literal labyrinth as though somehow or other we're going to come out with a good answer. Secondly, I would say this is not a normative situation. This is a one of, and it was necessary to test a patriarch's faith, and it was fundamental to his position in the history of faith. In other words, it has direct ramifications for us. And of course, the question of whether God would ask for human sacrifice is settled by the fact that God himself prevented human sacrifice and provided another sacrifice, which is the only sacrifice ever permitted, which is the sacrifice of his son. And you can read in Hebrews that Abraham had faith, and Abraham's faith was such that he knew that even if he were to sacrifice Isaac, God would bring Isaac back from the dead. That's how Abraham was reasoning. So this was a very unique situation, which ultimately was a type pointing forward to an antitype. And so if you take all of the historical milieu into consideration, where did this happen? Mount Moriah. Where was the temple built? Where was Jesus Christ sacrificed? All of this was typological, fulfilled in an antitype, Jesus Christ, the type that points to spiritual living sacrifices, which is precisely what Abraham was called to do and what you and I today are called to do, to offer our bodies as living sacrifices, holy and pleasing to God. This is our spiritual act of worship. But again, the question of whether God would ask for human sacrifice is settled by the fact that God himself prevented human sacrifice. Again, I think it's important to read Hebrews 11 in this regard. Let's go back to the phone lines. We'll talk next to Susan. She's listening in Arizona. Hi, Susan.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
My mom just started a Bible study, and she said that it was from a guy, I don't remember his name, but apparently he's been passed on for a couple years. So she said that the teaching was that they are little Jesuses, and I remembered hearing something on your program about somebody else saying, you know, that we're little gods, in other words, little Jesuses, since Jesus is God. And I didn't remember what you had said about where that's coming from, and I looked on your website and I couldn't find a write-up on it to pass that on to her.
Yeah, well, the best resource in this regard is a book that I wrote called Christianity in Crisis, 21st Century, which you should be able to find on the web at equip.org. But the bottom line here, I think, is words are not univocal, they're equivocal. So you want to know what people mean by what they say. If a Mormon says you are going to be a god, they mean that God was once a man, he is now a god. And just as God is now a God, you, a man, can become a God. The same thing is true in the Word of Faith movement. The Word of Faith movement says we are little gods. Because we can exercise the force of faith as God exercises the force of faith, thus we can call into existence things that are not. That, of course, is a regurgitation of New Thought metaphysics dressed up in Christian language. We'll be right back with more of your questions, so please don't touch that dial.
The famous British apologist G.K. Chesterton once noted, "The true soldier fights not because he hates what is in front of him, but because he loves what is behind him. Because at CRI we love what is behind us, our faith, our families, and our freedoms, we will never retreat quietly from the growing assaults on life and truth. Even when the costs are great, we will stand." To join like-minded friends in making a difference at home and around the globe, and to equip fellow believers to stand their ground courageously, become a member of CRI's support team. Simply call 888-7000-CRI. That's 888-7000-CRI, or visit our website at equip.org. Stay with us. Hank Hanegraaff will return in a few moments. Breaking the code of the Book of Revelation has become an international obsession. The result has been rampant misreading of Scripture, bad theology, and even bad politics and foreign policy. In the Apocalypse Code, find out what the Bible really says about the end times and why it matters today. Hank Hanegraaff argues that the key to understanding the last book of the Bible is the other 65 books of the Bible, not current events or recent history. The Apocalypse Code offers sane answers to some very controversial questions, such as, what does it mean to take the book of Revelation literally? Who are the Antichrist and the Great Whore of Babylon? And what is the real meaning of 666? Order the Apocalypse Code by Hank Hanegraaff today. Available in softcover, MP3 CD, or MP3 download from equip.org. Or call 888-7000-CRI. The Complete Bible Answer Book Collector's Edition is the comprehensive collection of the most often asked questions Hank Hanegraaff has received throughout his four decades as host of the Bible Answer Man broadcast. With more than 500,000 copies already in print, this newly revised and expanded Collector's Edition helps seekers and skeptics alike sort through the truth on topics such as reliability of the Bible, religions and cults, the resurrection and afterlife, and many more issues vital to a better understanding of God in Christ and our relationship to Him. To receive your copy of the Complete Bible Answer Book, Collector's Edition, Revised and Expanded, call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI. Or visit us at equip.org. Bertrand Russell famously said, "Most people would rather die than think, and many of them do." Not so with CRI support team members. Support team members are not only serious thinkers, but their membership in CRI's support team helps to equip hundreds of thousands of fellow believers around the globe each and every month. Are you not a member? Then you're missing out. Not only do support team members form the backbone of Christian Research Institute's outreaches, but they enjoy their selection of resources from our Equipping Essentials library. To discover how you can make a difference 24/7 in equipping believers at home and abroad to stand for life and truth, check out the benefits of membership at equip.org. Once again, that's equip.org. Let's return to your host, Hank Hanegraaff.
Thank you very much, Randy, and we will go right back to our phone calls in just a moment, but I want to mention to you that for those of you that join the support team, I will be delighted to personalize a copy of the Complete Bible Answer Book Collector's Edition to a family member, a friend, or to you personally. And if you already have the Complete Bible Answer Book Collector's Edition, I'll be happy to do the same with one of my other books. But again, this is a way of saying thank you to those who become partners with this ministry. We need many of you. Without you, we simply cannot do what we do. We are, in many cases, a lone voice crying in the wilderness. The voices of sophistry and sensationalism continue to crowd out the voices of reason. And unfortunately, having lost discernment skills, standing in the shadow of the Bible, we no longer know how to sort out the sophistry from genuine science of scriptural interpretation. So we need you to stand with us, and we ask you to do that in a safe, secure fashion on the web at equip.org. All you have to do is go to the web, equip.org/donate, select support team, and then fill out the online form. Want to go back to the phone lines now, talk to Marilyn listening on the web in Washington. Hi, Marilyn.
Hi, Hank. Thank you for taking my call.
Pleasure.
Some people don't appreciate or don't care for the Scofield Reference Bible, and I was wondering why.
Well, I'm one of them. As far as C.I. Scofield is concerned, he was one of those who popularized John Nelson Darby's rapture theories. And he started with a presupposition, and that is that God has two distinct people. And because God has two distinct people, he has two distinct plans, necessitating two distinct timings of the second coming of Jesus Christ, a secret coming, a seven-year rapture, and then a second coming. So he started with a flawed premise, that premise being that God has two distinct people. God has always ever had one people. True Israel has always been true Israel, not by genealogy, not by ethnicity, but always as a result of relationship. That's why we find Rahab in a privileged position in the lineage of Jesus Christ. It's why Ruth, a Moabite, the arch enemy of Israel, was in a privileged position in the lineage of Jesus Christ. It's why, by the way, many people became Jews after seeing God sovereignly use Esther to save the Jewish people from certain destruction under Haman. It says in the text, and I believe the passage is Esther chapter 8, and I think it's the last verse. Many different people from many different nations became Jews. Now, how did they do that? Did they change their birth mother? They were brought into all the types and shadows that pointed forward to Jesus Christ. So true Israel is always true Israel. God has always had one chosen people, beautifully connected by the cross and illustrated by a cultivated olive tree in the New Testament. So the premise he had, I think, was wrong. But even beyond that, Scofield said that as a dispensation, grace begins with the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ. The point of testing, he said, is no longer legal obedience as the condition of salvation, but acceptance or rejection of Christ with good works as a fruit of salvation. So the point for Scofield was that there was a time where people were not saved by God's grace through faith in Jesus Christ, and that is simply wrong. In the Old Testament, people looked forward to Jesus Christ through types and shadows. We look back at Jesus Christ. Every time we take communion, we remember what Jesus Christ did on the cross. And of course, it's more than just a memorial, but the reality is we are brought face to face with the cross in the sacraments. So the idea that grace is some kind of a New Testament thing is simply wrong.
I see. Okay, thank you. I didn't get a chance to ask the person who said that at the time, and I knew you would be able to give me a good answer.
Well, I've read about this in several places, including my book, The Complete Bible Answer Book Collector's Edition, as well as The Apocalypse Code, Find Out What the Bible Really Says About the End Times and Why It Matters Today.
Yep. Okay, thank you very much.
You got it. Thank you so much for your call. Back to the phone lines. Let's talk next to Steve. He's listening in Hammond, Louisiana. Hi, Steve.
Hey, Hank. Thanks for taking my call. Got a quick question about how the different theories on the rapture, especially the pre-trib, and even it's my understanding there's a few out there that believe in a mid-trib rapture, how they developed a quick history and any scriptural basis for it.
Well, there's no scriptural basis from my perspective. From my perspective, people have taken the great and glorious truths of resurrection and they've substituted the idea of a pre-tribulational rapture. And prior to the time of the people I was talking about just earlier, prior to the time of C.I. Scofield and John Nelson Darby, all Christians, futurists included, believed that the rapture slash second coming were simultaneous. So this idea of a pre-tribulational rapture is very modern. Now, the fact that it's new doesn't mean it's not true, but I think the fact that it's new should caution us to examine it very carefully in light of the evidence. I don't think any of the passages that are typically brought forward to support the rapture actually support the rapture. If you talk to people like Tim LaHaye, the author of the wildly popular Left Behind series, or the co-author, Tim LaHaye will tell you that you can find the pre-tribulational rapture in John chapter 14, or you can find it in 1 Thessalonians chapter 4. But if you read 1 Thessalonians 4, or better yet, memorize 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, the thing you immediately realize is 1 Thessalonians 4 has nothing whatsoever to do with a pre-tribulational rapture. Paul says, brothers, I don't want you to be ignorant about those who fall asleep and to grieve like the rest of those who have no hope. We believe that Jesus died and rose again, and so we believe that God will bring with Jesus those who have fallen asleep in him. So he is talking about the great and glorious hope of resurrection, not a pre-tribulational rapture. And remember that Paul says Jesus is going to come down with a loud command, with the voice of the archangel, with the trumpet call of God. That hardly sounds like a secret rapture or a secret coming before the second coming 7 years later.
Would this be sort of analogous to the prosperity gospel, to where the theory that Christians shouldn't have to go through the tribulation, which I find ridiculous?
Well, perhaps there are some connections, but I wouldn't necessarily suppose that those connections are a result of the pre-tribulational rapture view, because I know a lot of people that hold that view, dear brothers and sisters in the Lord, they don't hold to the prosperity gospel at all.
Right. I understand. But thanks, Hank. I appreciate it.
You got it. Thanks for your call. Want to go back to the phone lines now and talk to Alice. She's listening in Houston, Texas. Hi, Alice.
Oh, how are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. I just came back from my book club, and I was hearing from my friend about a little thing called pantheism, because I suppose her daughter had dabbled in it or was talking about it. And some words were exchanged, and I didn't really know what she was talking about. So could you shed some light on what that is?
Yeah. In an Eastern worldview, humanity's goal is always, always, always to become one with nature, because nature is God. And in that sense, the Eastern worldview is pantheistic. In other words, God is all, and all is God. Now, if you contrast that with Christianity, Christianity teaches that man is created in the image and likeness of his Creator, and as such is distinct from both nature and God. So I think it's important for us to recognize that this becomes a wonderful springboard or an opportunity to take a deviation and use it as an opportunity to share the grace and love and peace that only Jesus Christ can bring to the human life. Because the reality is, we're never going to escape the body. The body's not evil. The reality is, the body is going to be resurrected. And we're going to live in a renewed universe, in resurrected bodies, with a resurrected Lord, and forever explore the glory and grace of the one who saved us, who redeemed us, who loved us so much that he made a way for us to be reconciled to him for time and for eternity. Unfortunately, I'm out of time for this edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast. Thank you for tuning in. We'll see you right here next time with more of the Bible Answer Man broadcast.
We appreciate you tuning in to the Bible Answer Man broadcast. If you've been blessed by the broadcast and want more information to help you grow in the grace and knowledge of God, go to our website at equip.org. That's equip.org. To contact a resource consultant, call 888-7000-CRI. Again, that's 888-7000-274. Or you can write to us at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. The Bible Answer Man broadcast is supported by listeners like you. We're on the air because life and truth matter. Breaking the code of the Book of Revelation has become an international obsession. The result has been rampant misreading of Scripture, bad theology, and even bad politics and foreign policy. In the Apocalypse Code, find out what the Bible really says about the end times and why it matters today. Hank Hanegraaff argues that the key to understanding the last book of the Bible is the other 65 books of the Bible, not current events or recent history. The Apocalypse Code offers sane answers to some very controversial questions, such as, what does it mean to take the book of Revelation literally? Who are the Antichrist and the Great Whore of Babylon? And what is the real meaning of 666? Order The Apocalypse Code by Hank Hanegraaff today. Available in softcover, MP3 CD, or MP3 download from equip.org. Or call 888-7000-CRI.